I'm going to go ahead and read the thing. So here on this show, we have talked about volcanoes. We have talked about events that have caused massive losses of life. But we've never talked about this particular volcano and the theory that it may have potentially ended human life about 70,000 years ago. A super eruption may have left as few as 3 to 10,000 humans left on the planet. On this episode of Relative Disasters, the Toba Super Eruption. Welcome to Relative Disasters, the show where I borrow a small hot air balloon from a shady man in a top hat, load that hot air balloon into a podcast, and send it out to my sister and anyone else who feels like listening. My much cooler big sister and I manage our existential dread by talking with each other about terrible and interesting historical events, their context, implications, and any related sidebars that tend to distract me. My name is Greg, my sister's name is Ella, and Ella, today I am joined by a special guest, Child Unit A. Say hello, Child Unit A.
Hey, what's up?
Child Unit A is also waving, not quite grasping the audio medium here. So we are going to be talking about a volcanic eruption that is, not only was this one of the largest volcanic explosions ever, it may have reduced the human population down to a barely sustainable amount. Our sources for this episode come from a study from the Michigan Technological University by Bill Rose and Craig Chesner, published as Eruptive History of Earth's Largest Quaternary Caldera, Toba, Indonesia, Clarified, in the Geology magazine for the Michigan Technological University in 1991. Late Pleistocene Human Population Bottlenecks, Volcanic Winter, and Differentiation of Modern Humans, published in the Journal of Human Evolution in 1998 by Stanley Ambrose. Volcanic Winter in the Garden of Eden, the Toba Super Eruption and the Late Pleistocene Human Population Crash by Stanley Ambrose and M. Rapino, published in Volcanic Hazards and Disasters in Human Antiquity for the Geological Society of America in 2000. And Mobile Elements Reveal Small Population Size in the Ancient Ancestors of Homo Sapiens. That's by Chad Huff, Xinchuan Jing, and Alan Rogers et al., published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in January of 2010. Child Unit A, what do you know about Indonesia?
It's a lot of islands.
Yep.
It's like southeast to the coast of Asia.
There's a really cool lake there. It's called Lake Toba. It is a big lake.
How big are we talking?
We're talking 1,130 square kilometers, about 440 square miles.
That's a lot of big.
And it is essentially the caldera of a supervolcano.
So, caldera? What's caldera?
Like the hole of a supervolcano.
Okay, so basically like a crater.
Sure. This thing erupted about 74,000 years ago, which is the largest known explosive eruption on Earth in the last 25 million years.
That's also a lot of years.
Now, this thing is a big deal because it led to a volcanic winter, which is when so much dust and ash gets shot up into the atmosphere and reflects so much sunlight that you don't get a summer until all that stuff settles.
Yeah.
Just constant cold. So, if you were to look into this lake underwater, you would see four stratovolcanoes, okay? So, those are the sort of classic mountain volcano of, like, you know, it's, like, built up into a cone.
Yeah.
And there's another volcano not that far away, which is still a little bit active. Just a little bit active. It's not that bad. So what this did about 74,000 years ago, the estimated amount of material that was released in that eruption was about 670 cubic miles.
Wait.
About 2,800 cubic kilometers of stuff They got blown up into the sky by this volcano. The pyroclastic flows, which we've talked about before on this show, destroyed about 20,000 square kilometers, with ash deposits as thick as 600 meters. That's almost 2,000 feet. Yeah. Here's another thing for scale. The eruption was large enough to have left about 6 inches of ash over all of South Asia. Now, of course, when it blew all that material into the sky, it
covered our atmosphere and blocked off a lot of our sunlight.
Absolutely. Now, here is where the science kind of argues with itself. Basically, the two scientific theories, which are directly competing, are that this super eruption caused a volcanic winter, which caused a worldwide population crash. However, other studies have shown that cooling had already started before the eruption, so it may have simply contributed and caused it to be worse, and that the lake cores from lakes in Africa and in the Greenland Ice Sheet Project don't show that there was a lot of material that made up long-term effects. So it's entirely possible that this explosion, while huge, was simply a contributing factor in a worldwide cooling, not, you know,
the cause of the worldwide.
The main cause, yeah, yeah. So this is where it gets weird.
How weird are we talking?
Oh, we're talking about a genetic bottleneck. So, a genetic bottleneck is when, all of a sudden, a large population becomes a very small population because of something happening. An earthquake wipes out most of the people, a flood, a volcanic eruption, for example. And what that does is that reduces an entire population down to just a few genetic pairs. Okay? Now, if you look back in human mitochondrial DNA, around this time, our genetic diversity was below what you would think it should be. And this is what led Stanley Ambrose of the University of Illinois in 1998 to propose the Toba catastrophe theory, which is that the worldwide effects of the Toba eruption sent the human population at the time into a genetic crash. And only a few tens of thousands of individuals may have survived. Now, there is a problem with this, because there doesn't seem to be a corresponding population bottleneck in other species.
So it was only just a crash in Homo sapiens?
Basically.
That's a little strange.
And one of the better theories on this is that it may be what's called the out-of-Africa founder effect, which is basically that human beings around this time all of a sudden just spread out, which we have evidence of human beings doing. And when they spread out, they limited their own genetic propagation, because instead of
they were limiting the possible gene pool.
Bingo. Instead of being in one huge group, they split off into a bunch of smaller groups.
Yeah, so you don't have access to as many genes as you normally would. But by now, we've recovered that because of our modern society, right?
Well, we probably recovered that at least, you know, if this happened 74,000 years ago, then you'd probably look at like 20 or 30,000 years ago. We probably recovered that genetic diversity. So, Lake Toba lies near the Great Sumatran Fault, which is
just learned about that in science.
Awesome. It is a highly seismic area, still is, which goes from about the middle of Sumatra all the way through this thing called the Sumatra Fracture Zone. And basically all of this is caused because the Indo-Australian tectonic plate is sliding under the Eurasian plate.
Okay, causing a subduction zone.
Exactly, causing a subduction zone. Very good, you're paying attention. Yeah. What that does is that sets off a bunch of earthquakes, it sets off a bunch of volcanoes. Right now, the Toba supervolcano, under all that water, under all that land, contains a magma chamber with about 12,000 cubic miles of eruptible magma, and which is about 31 miles underground.
Okay.
So it is 4 times larger than the volume of Lake Superior. Jeez. And larger than the magma chamber underneath Yellowstone.
Oh.
So when people are talking about, like, a potential apocalyptic eruption, this is what we're talking about. So, is it hasn't erupted for 74,000 years.
Yeah.
One of the cones may have erupted, like, 68,000 years ago, yeah. But... And it's probably not going to anytime soon.
Yeah, it's probably going to have a few small effusive eruptions, but not, like, a huge explosive one.
Yeah. I mean, we don't even have gases leaking out of it right now.
Yeah.
So it's just a massive amount of magma that's underground a pretty decent ways down.
Okay.
So after the Toba eruption, if you look at the Greenland ice cores, which are pretty cool, you will see a lot of sulfates start to spike into those ice cores. And that may have been related to the Toba eruption, which could indicate a 1,000-year cooling event after that sulfate. However, Toba probably didn't trigger the cooling because you see trace elements of that beforehand.
Yeah.
So the Toba super eruption happened, but the theory that it nearly wiped out humanity looks less and less like it might be what happened, as opposed to the natural diaspora of people leaving Africa, and
yeah.
A giant volcano probably did contribute to the global cooling, but was not the main cause of it.
Yeah, the global cooling was already happening, but the volcanic eruption just fast-tracked
it. Yeah, it helped it along a little bit. So, interestingly enough, most modern-day humans descend mainly from a single big expansion from 70,000 to 50,000 years ago, moving along the coast of Asia, and then out into the rest of the world, which is pretty cool. So, humans are cool.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm saying.
And then, thousands of years after that,
here we are with the podcast.
Yeah.
Also very cool, the Batak people live around Lake Toba, and they have a really cool folk story where there's a fisherman who catches a golden fish, and that's part of the origin. All right. So one of the caveats here regarding the genetic bottleneck hypothesis due to the Toba super eruption is that while the Toba super eruption may not have caused a dieback event where the human population was reduced, it may have been a factor in why humans left where they were. Think about it. If you've got enough to eat and a safe environment, why would you leave? The Toba supervolcano shooting a bunch of ash into the sky and causing a volcanic winter
turned that safe environment into a dangerous one.
Not really, but it may have made certain groups of people have to strike out to look for more food.
Yeah. And that eventually turned into migration.
And interestingly enough, the Eastern African chimpanzee, the Bornean orangutan, the macaque of central India, and the cheetah and tiger species also had their populations reduced to very, very small numbers around this general time. So genetic evidence in modern humans say that somewhere between 3 and 10,000 humans are where all of our genetic ancestors come from. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, but it's a really low amount of humans.
It is. It is. And I mean, considering that we've got 7 billion of us walking around now.
Yeah.
So the effects of the Toba super eruption were as follows. The best guess we have is that the Toba volcano erupted for about 9 to 14 days.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's a long eruption.
Depositing 15 centimeters of ash over the Indian subcontinent.
That's like...
Six inches. Glass shards from this have been discovered as far away as East Africa. It was a huge eruption.
It sounds it.
And that is the story of the Toba super eruption.
How did our population survive if it was reduced to like under 10,000 people?
Well, humans are very good at breeding.
That's true.
And the thing is that sort of almost conversely with our structures, our group structures, our social structures, enable us to survive conditions better.
Yeah, it's like if we have people to rely on, we're less likely to die.
Absolutely. We've talked a little bit about how, like, what people consider to be the first sign of civilization, whether it's writing or farming or people living in houses and stuff like that. And I think the first sign of civilization is looking back through human bones and finding the first bone that's healed. Because a broken leg is a death sentence if you're a hunter-gatherer. Yeah. You can't hunt, you can't really gather, you're gonna die. But if you have a broken leg and that heals, it's because somebody kept you alive. Somebody brought you food. Yeah. Somebody took care of you. And obviously the other stuff, it didn't get super infected, you didn't die of a heart attack, blah, blah, blah. But the, so human beings, once we decide that we're going to take care of each other, we're really good at it. And I think that in a case where we're reduced to, you know, a population of, let's be generous and say 10,000.
We would all, like, have to work together to help each other.
Well, yeah, obviously, if we're going to survive.
Yeah.
Otherwise, this story becomes how humans went extinct. I'm sure there were animals that existed at this time period that did not make it through this dieback event because they did not have the capability of taking care of each other. So humans were prolific breeders, and we sometimes decide that it's worth it to take care of each other. And I think that's a good thing.
That's pretty cool. Humans can be awesome sometimes.
Humans can be awesome. Sometimes. Here at Relative Disasters, we make sure to fact check our work to bring you the most accurate disaster experience possible. If you'd like to know more about our sources, they're cited at the beginning of the episode. Sometimes we do make mistakes, of course. So if you have any thoughts to share or corrections we need to know, please write to us at relative.disasters@gmail.com. We cannot respond to emails, but we do read each one. Or if you'd like to shame us publicly, and we know you do, why not try our Instagram at relative.disasters. A big thank you to our patrons who support us at Relative Disasters Podcast on Patreon. You guys are great and help us justify keeping this podcast ad-free. We'd like to thank our major disasters, Katie and Georgia, for their support. And this week's episode was brought to you by Julie, who has journeyed far and wide in her lifetime. Al, who is single-handedly responsible for avoiding the major dieback events of his own life. This year, our special Patreon episodes are going to center around weird history. The first one will be coming February 1st. And
mark your calendars, guys.
It looks pretty fun. Thank you all so much for joining us for this episode. I hope you've enjoyed the story, and I hope you'll join us again next week. Ella, next week, we are going to Paris. I know a city you like a whole lot. Where we are going to talk about the time that a train drove right through a station. And, like, not on the tracks. Like, through the walls.
Oh!
That's right. We are going to be talking about the 1895 Montparnasse derailment. Have a good week, and I'll see you then.